Yeah, but that's a whole different podcast. Not the one we're about to do.
Right, okay.
I need to turn my headphones up. Hold on. Here we go. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rosedahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do now that I am out of isolation. Oh, my God.
Yay.
Oh, my God.
And I'm Amy Scott. I'm back in for Kimberly Adams. It's Monday. Thanks for joining us. So that means we're going to talk about today's news and end on some Make Me Smiles to get your week going. Kai, what you got today?
So I've got two things, one of which is a no-brainer, but I feel obliged to mention just in the spirit of keeping people informed and good civic behavior. And then the other one's real. So number one, so as everybody has probably heard already, a federal judge down in Florida has ruled that the CDC's mask mandate is illegal. The CDC overstepped its authority, and thus the mask mandate is no longer valid. About which two things. Number one, don't be a jerk. Leave your mask on the airplane until the FAA and the federal government hand down new rules and regulations for how this is going to go. Just because this judge ruled it doesn't mean that it instantaneously happens. That's number one. Don't be a jerk.
Right.
And number two is don't be a jerk. Don't be a jerk. That's it. That's it. You just, I mean, honestly, I just got off, 18 hours worth of airplanes coming back from spring break, and it was completely miserable. And I get it wearing a mask, but I'm thinking of the flight attendants and the crews and everybody and your fellow passengers who might want to be masked. Just don't be a jerk. Just roll with it for another day or two. They'll figure it out. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's number one. Number two is a story from Bloomberg and much more substantive. The president of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, his name is James Bullard. He said today that it's entirely possible that the Federal Reserve might have to raise interest rates, which we know they're going to do in their May meeting, which is May 3 and 4, might have to raise interest rates, not 50 basis points, that is to say half percentage point, but 75 basis points, 0.75%. So this is now the Fed coming out and being really hawkish, really concerned about inflation. I actually don't think that Powell is going to go 0.75%, because then I think the feces hits the rotating oscillating device and the markets will just plot. I get in trouble when I swear on this podcast. I think they're going to stay at 50.
And
it is a family show. That's right. We don't want that E. They're going to stay at a half percentage point, and then maybe they're going to talk about 0.75% for next time. In other words, the meeting after this upcoming one. Because look, inflation is real, and 8.5%, and people are rightly worried and concerned, both politically, as the Biden administration should be, but also just straight up economically, as everybody in America understands. So the Fed is talking the talk. I don't think they're going to do it this time, but I think 75 basis points could be on the table later in the summer. That's my next sense, I think.
I don't know if you know this, but has 75 been done in a single meeting before?
Yeah, it has. I mean, Greenspan's
done it. It was like more than 50 in the 90s or something.
Yeah, right. Greenspan did it in 94.
Okay.
It would be unusual. It would be absolutely unusual. And that's part of the reason they're not going to do it with no notice, right? Jay Powell has been extremely clear. Powell has been saying the whole time, we are going to tell you exactly what we're going to do. Then we're going to do it. Everybody remain calm, right? So that's why they're not going to go 75 basis points this time, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'd bet you a paycheck.
All right.
Maybe.
You heard it here.
Well, we'll see.
You know, just to go back to the mask thing, I was on a plane last night from Tampa where this decision came down.
Oh.
And I would say mask compliance was 100%. And I imagine
today
it was a little more difficult for those flight attendants.
Yeah. Well, look, I will go with what the senior producer of this podcast, Bridget Bodner, said at one point in the not-too-distant past, which is, who's going to fly without a mask on an airplane now? Because every time you fly, I mean, I probably, a third of the time that I fly, I get off the plane with a cold, right?
Yeah.
And so,
I remember
just,
those days before COVID.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And unless it's like a super long, transatlantic flight or transcontinental flight, suck it up for 3, 4, 5 hours. You know, if you need to, go in the bathroom, rub your face, take your mask off, blah, blah, blah. I just think it's smarter. But that's just me. That's just me. What do you got?
Okay. Well, it's tax day. You may be aware.
Yes.
So in honor of filing the first ever extension in my taxpaying life, I thought I'd talk a little about the IRS, which is... struggling, we should say. The Treasury Department put out a really interesting statement today. I don't know if you saw this. It was basically a cry for help. And Natasha Sarin, who's the counselor for tax policy and implementation at the Treasury, basically said the IRS is chronically underfunded, massively understaffed, struggling with antiquated technology, and all this is happening at a time when its responsibilities have only increased during the pandemic because, as you know, they were the ones sending out three rounds of stimulus checks and advanced child tax credit payments. And because of all this, this official says, the IRS began this tax season with tens of millions of returns still unprocessed from last year. And I don't know about you, but if any of our listeners are waiting for their refund from last year, I'd be really interested to know that.
Yeah, no joke, right? Seriously, because that's cray-cray.
That's a lot. And of course, you know, that's money that people could be using right now.
Speaking
for myself. So this thing is just full of interesting tidbits, like the fact that it takes the average Estonian 5 minutes to file a return, whereas here in the United States, it's 13 hours. Or that the difference between what taxpayers owe and what the IRS actually collects is estimated to be about $600 billion a year. And almost a third of that is owed by the richest 1% of Americans.
Yeah.
And so this is basically a plea by the government for the funding that the Biden administration has asked Congress for, $80 billion over 10 years to modernize the IRS. Republicans have been really reluctant to give more money to the agency. I mean, historically, but especially after that leak last year of the tax returns of thousands of the country's wealthiest people that was published by ProPublica.
ProPublica, yeah.
So anyway, if you haven't already, when you hit send on your return or stick it in the mailbox, spare a thought for the folks at the other end who are processing that return.
Totally.
It's going to take them a while.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. And look, sorry, just real quick. This is a choice that Congress has made, by the way. Congress has made this choice actively to insufficiently fund the revenue generating body for the government, which I don't know, shoot yourself in the foot much? Whatever.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think staffing is at like 1970s levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite the growth of this economy and the population. So.
For sure. All right, Charlton, let's go. Okay. I've got two just because I feel like it. Number one is I am actually on the recommendation of one Kimberly Adams, the regular co-host of this podcast. I'm watching what is now an Amazon miniseries, but I think was, I don't even know, like Stars or Discovery or something, series called The Expanse. It's a space, distant future sci-fi thing that I'm now way too deep in to stop watching. Anyway, which piqued my interest in this story. I'm a space geek, as is Kimberly. Story in the New York Times the other day. Military memo deepens possible interstellar meteor mystery. Now, we will put the details of this story on the show page. We'll put an actual link. But there was a meteor that came through our solar system that some observers, and this was like 8 years ago, it was like 2014, some observers at Harvard thought was from another solar system. That is to say, outside our solar system, which would be amazeballs, right? Interstellar from another star.
Cool.
Which would be really cool. Except the data that would have proved it was locked up inside the military industrial complex, which is pejorative. But basically, the way that we could have proved it would have been to reveal details about how we monitor things going on in the interstellar space and also, oh, by the way, foreign missiles. So the Defense Department would not give up that data, but they have now released a memorandum that says, hey, our data, which we will not share with you, says this totally could be an interstellar body. So I just want to say that that would be really cool. That would be amazingly cool if a thing from outside the solar system came in. That would just be super cool, and I would dig that. That is all.
Absolutely. And I'm not even a space geek. I agree.
I know. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So here's my second thing. And it's if you don't read Matt Levine at Bloomberg, and if you're a finance and markets geek, you should. He's been writing a lot about Twitter. And very quickly, Elon Musk accumulated a 9.2% stake, now wants to buy the whole thing for $43 billion more. The company has launched a poison pill, which is a way to dilute its share so that it would make it really expensive for Musk to complete his purchase. Anyway, Musk very famously 3 or 4 years ago said, I'm going to take Tesla private at $420 a share. 420, of course, being the whole, oh, it's 420, marijuana day, whatever. I've never understood how that makes any sense. But that's his little joke. And of course, he said funding secured, and it really wasn't. And he got in a bunch of trouble with the SEC.
Yep.
His tweet saying that he was going to take Twitter private said, I've made an offer at $54.20 a share. $54.20 a share. Get it? Right?
Ha ha ha.
Marijuana joke. Wait, it gets better. So the company on Friday put out its poison pill offer. And its poison pill said, I love this. Its poison pill basically said, shareholders may buy additional shares at $210 and they can go 2-for-1. And $210, 2-for-1 is?
Oh, come on, Kai.
Exactly. Can somebody, will somebody please grow up? Will somebody at Twitter or in Elon Musk's orbit please grow up? That's all I want to know. That's it. That's what I got. Made me laugh.
Make me groan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was on vacation and missed that whole drama. And so thank you for the recap.
Oh, my God.
Because it was super helpful.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I've got one, but it takes a while to get to the smiley part. So just bear with me.
Okay. I will.
So you know this wave of book banning that's happening in schools.
Yep. Absolutely.
A nonprofit free speech group called PEN America recently reported that there have been more than 1,500 book bans in schools just in the past 9 months. So it's really an unprecedented push. And most of these are targeting books by or about Black people and racism or about LGBTQ people. The Washington Post had a story today about how this movement has recently expanded from schools to public libraries, making up about 37% of book challenges last year. So to get to the smiley part, another thing I missed while on vacation, but I saw on Twitter today, was a link to a story on a site called Book Riot that says in response to all this, the Brooklyn Public Library is offering free electronic library cards to young people between 13 and 21 anywhere in the country.
Hmm.
So normally if you live out of state,
that's great.
You have to pay for a library card to the Brooklyn Public Library. But this will give these young people access to hundreds of thousands of ebooks and audiobooks with a special collection of frequently challenged books that are always available with no wait, including classics like Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, the recent 1619 Project by Nicole Hannah-Jones in the New York Times Magazine. You know, free books. It's a good story.
Yeah,
the story points out that the most vulnerable kids are likely to have the least access to reliable technology. So it's not clear how many kids this will really reach. But
yeah, but
free speech,
even a few,
I'm all for it.
Even a few. Yeah, totally. Totally. And I will tell you, just anecdotally, the whole discussion over books in the classroom and books in the school library reaches everywhere, including upper middle class suburbia in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah?
I say from personal experience. It's wild. It's
really
crazy. It's absolutely wild.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wild.
Well, and what's really interesting is a lot of this is going on outside of the normal process of challenging books.
Yeah.
Secretively and in kind of dastardly ways.
Books are
ways.
Like just disappearing. Yes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And even the Maurice Sendak book, In the Night Kitchen. Do you remember that one? I mean, just
I don't know
classic books that I loved as a kid are under attack for often very strange reasons. Like this boy in the book is portrayed without clothes on, as kids, you know, often are. It's just bananas.
All right. Well, we're going to go out on that a little bit depressing note, but at least kids can get a...
Make me smile. There was a smile in there somewhere. I forgot it.
It's okay. There was a smile in there somewhere. We're done for today. Amy and I are back tomorrow. We're doing the economics of refugees with Obviously, Ukraine and Ukrainians being resettled, continuing to be in the news. There's also Afghans in this country still being resettled. Costs, ramifications, economic impact, we're going to, and payoff, by the way, for the rest of society. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about all of that tomorrow on the Tuesday show.
Yeah, and you can weigh in with questions or tell us what you thought about today's show. You can send us a voice memo or email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call and leave a voice message, and that number is 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Mark A. Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's program is engineered by Charlton Thorne.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Donna. There we go.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.